Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, The Crystal Star by Vonda N. McIntyre. The children had been kidnapped. Leia ran headlong toward the glade, leaving behind the courtiers and the chamberlain of Munto Kodru, leaving her attendants, leaving the young page who, completely against protocol, had stumbled into Leia's receiving room, bleeding from nose and ears, incoherent. But Leia understood her. Jaina and Jason and Anakin had been stolen. Leia ran now through the trees and down a soft mossy path that led into her children's playground. Jaina imagined the path was a starship course set to hyperspace. Jason pretended it was a great mysterious road, a river. Anakin, going through a literal phase, insisted that it was only a path through the forest to the meadow. Leia's vision blurred with tears. Her soft slipper snared in the tangled moss. She stumbled, caught herself, and plunged onward, holding the skirts of her court robe high. She cried out to herself, "How could this happen? How is this possible?" The answer, the only way it could be possible, terrified her. For a short time, her ability to sense the presence of her children had been neutralized. Only a manipulation of the Force could have such an effect. Leia reached the meadow. She ran toward the creek where Jaina and Jason had splashed and played and taught little Anakin to swim. A crater ripped into the soft grass. The leafy blades had been flattened into a circle around the raw patch of empty dirt. A pressure bomb had gone off near her children. "They aren't dead," she told herself. "They can't be. I'd know if they were dead." At the edge of the blast area, Chewbacca lay sprawled in a heap. Blood flowed bright against his chestnut coat. Leia fell to her knees beside him. He was bleeding, still breathing. She pressed her hand against the deep gash in his leg, desperate to stop the flow of blood and save his life. Like the page, he also bled from ears and nostrils. Chewbacca's cry was not a groan of pain, but a cry of rage and remorse. "Lie still. Chewbacca, lie still. The doctor is coming. You'll be all right. What happened? Oh, what happened?" Leia understood that he felt such despair that he wanted to die. He had adopted her family as his own, his honor family, and he had failed to protect the children. "You can't die." "He must live," she thought. "He must. Only he can tell me who stole my children. Come back. Come back to me." The courtiers and advisers and guards had caught up with her, and now they gathered round. "Did you bring the doctor?" Leia asked Mr. Ion, the chamberlain of Munto Kodru.
"I sent for her, madam."
The doctor ran across the field. Her six-legged werewolf loped behind her, carrying her equipment and supplies. Leia was reminded that Mr. Ion's werewolf had been playing with her children. It had disappeared as well. Dr. Hyos knelt beside Chewbacca. The werewolf sat on its haunches. It turned its massive head, staring at Leia with great, limpid blue eyes. Its coat was thick and brown, with long, coarse black guard hairs. Its face was grotesque. Its hot, bitter breath made Leia flinch away. Dr. Hyos's four hands, so languid at rest, moved quickly over the panniers strapped to the werewolf's sides.
"Do you see what I'm doing, my dear?" she said softly. "The bleeding is most important. Our princess has stopped it."
The doctor spoke to the werewolf, explaining everything she did. Dr. Hyos drew pressure bandages from one compartment as she chose the proper medicine from another. Always she told the werewolf what she was doing.
"Madam,"
Chamberlain Ion said, but he did not try to make Leia come away. "Close the port. Block the roads. Can the page be questioned? Check the port controller. Is there any chance the kidnappers have left the planet?" As Leia spoke, she feared any measures she might take would be useless, and if not useless, too late.
"Madam, closing the port would not be wise."
She glared at him, instantly suspicious of a man she had trusted only a moment before.
"There are traditions. If we follow them, nothing will happen to the children. That, too, is the tradition."
Leia knew of Montokodro's traditions of abduction and ransom. That was why Chewbacca had been staying so close to the children. That was why extra security surrounded and guarded the ancient castle. For the people of Montokodro, coup abduction was an important and traditional political sport. It was a sport in which Leia did not care to participate.
"It's a most audacious abduction," the Chamberlain said.
"And a cruel one. Chewbacca is wounded. And the pressure bomb. My children..." She fought for control of her voice and of her fear.
"The abductors detonated a pressure bomb only to prove that they could, madam."
The Chamberlain leaned toward her, intense.
"If you apply the rules of the Republic, disaster, tragedy will be the result. Your children will not be harmed, cannot be harmed, for the ransomers to achieve their goals. They may look upon the event as a great adventure."
"Close the port." Leia was too angry to respond to the Chamberlain's comment. "I won't take any chance that they'll leave Montokodro." Leia followed Dr. Hyos's assistants as they carried Chewbacca back to the surgery in the ancient Montokodro castle. She felt very alone. Han and Luke had left on an adventure with her blessing. The children's nanny, Winter, Leia's trusted assistant, had taken the opportunity afforded by this peaceful tour to attend a conference on runaway children. She, too, was worlds away. Leia waited outside the surgery, where Dr. Hyos and her assistants worked to heal Chewbacca's wounds.
"The ransom demand will come in the morning," the Chamberlain said, trying to reassure her.
Finally, the door of the surgery opened. Dr. Hyos patted the werewolf's heavy head, came to Leia, and took her hands.
"He'll be fine. His hearing will take time to recover from the effects of the pressure bomb. He'll be weak while he builds up his blood."
"Did he tell you..."
"He's not in any shape to tell anyone anything. Leia, my princess, he must sleep or he'll be in danger."
Leia turned to the Chamberlain. "Did you send my message to Han and Luke?"
"Yes, madam, but I regret. They are too close to Crescia Station. The star system is most violent. The black hole, its quantum crystal companion, their influence blocks communication."
"By the time a ship could reach Han," she thought, "whatever happens will have happened. I gain nothing by sending for him." Leia said, "I'll go back to the receiving room. I'll finish my appointments. If we haven't heard anything by sundown..."
"By morning, please, madam."
The Chamberlain's face was anxious.
"By morning, I assure you, we'll have instructions."
"Just like old times, eh, kid?"
Han Solo said to Luke Skywalker. Sitting in the co-pilot's seat of the Millennium Falcon, Luke grinned.
"Just like old times, except the Empire isn't trying to shoot us out of the sky."
"You got that right."
"And Jabba the Hutt isn't after your hide for dumping that spice load."
"Yeah.
And nobody is trying to collect old gambling debts from you."
"Also true," Han said. But he thought, "Although I might get around to running up some new gambling debts. After all, what's a vacation for?"
"And finally, you can't flirt with every beautiful woman who comes by."
"Sure I can."
As Luke chuckled, Han hurried to defend himself.
"Leia and I know where we stand with each other. We trust each other. She's not jealous." "Hey, kid, listen. Flirting is one of the best inventions of civilization."
Luke hated it when Han called him kid. That was why he did it. Luke stared out into hyperspace.
"You ought to do more flirting yourself."
"If I might be of service, Master Luke."
C-3PO leaned forward from the passenger seat.
"I have an extensive library of love poetry at your disposal, in several languages suitable for the human tongue, as well as etiquette, medical information, and..."
"I don't have time for flirtations or love poetry, not right now." 3PO sat back in the passenger seat. In the corner of Han's vision, the droid looked like a shadow. To disguise himself, C-3PO had covered his glossy gold finish with a coat of purple lacquer. Han had not yet gotten used to the change.
"Don't be so damn dedicated," Han said to Luke. "Don't Jedi Knights get to have any fun? Little Jedi Knights have to come from somewhere."
"I don't know what other Jedi Knights did," Luke replied softly.
The Millennium Falcon swept out of hyperspace, diving through streamers of light into normal space. Alarm shrieked, and the radiation shield snapped into existence around the Falcon. Han swore. He had expected a heavy radiation flux in this region, but nothing as powerful as the X-ray storms raging around them. A dense, brilliant star field spread all around his ship. Two star clusters collided. Bands of red giant stars, like veins of glowing blood, meandered through regions of white dwarf stars. The stars clustered so closely that they formed one huge chaotic system spinning around each other. Soon, measuring by astronomical time, the cluster's stars would fly off in all directions. Or perhaps the whole cluster would collapse in upon itself. It would squeeze its mass into the size of a planet, a moon, a fist, a pinprick, and then it would vanish.
If I may be so bold, despite the extra shielding, I can feel X-rays penetrating my outer shell all the way to my synapses. I can hardly imagine what they might do to your more delicate biological structure. Crecia Research Station was constructed to withstand this assault. Might I suggest that we get beneath the spaceport's shielding as soon as possible?
Han piloted the Millennium Falcon through the strangest star system he had ever approached. A dying white dwarf star orbited a black hole in a wildly eccentric elliptical path. The star shone with ancient heat even as it froze into a quantum crystal. Drawn by the gravitational attraction of the black hole, the white dwarf was falling toward the unimaginably dense body and its surrounding accretion disk, all that remained of masses that had been ripped apart by the black hole. The accretion disk spun at a fantastic speed, like a raging pinwheel, glowing with fantastic heat, blasting X-rays out into space. Then, finally, the glowing gas fell toward the invisible black hole, appearing to fall more and more slowly as relativity influenced it.
"Well, you look at that," Han said. "Quite a show."
"Indeed it is, Master Han," 3PO said. "But it is merely a shadow of what will occur when the black hole captures the crystal star."
Luke gazed silently into the maelstrom of the black hole.
"Hey, kid, snap out of it."
Luke started.
"What?"
"I don't know where you were, but you weren't here."
"Just thinking about the Jedi Academy, I hate to leave my students even for a few days. But if I do find other trained Jedi here, it'll make a big difference.
To the Academy? To the New Republic?"
"I think we are getting along pretty well already," Han said, irked.
He had spent years maintaining the peace with ordinary people. In his opinion, Jedi Knights could cause more trouble than they were worth.
"And what if the ones here are all using the dark side?" he asked.
Luke did not reply. Han seldom admitted his nightmares, but he had nightmares about what could happen to his children if they were tempted to the dark side. Right now they were safe with Leia on a planetary tour of remote and peaceful worlds of the New Republic. By this time they must have reached Monto Kudru. They would be visiting the beautiful mountains of the world's temperate zone. Han smiled, imagining his princess and his children being welcomed to one of Monto Kudru's mysterious ancient fairy tale castles. Solar prominences flared from the white dwarf's surface. The Falcon passed it, heading toward the more perilous region of the black hole. Han set the shields as high as they would go and sped through the dangerous radiation to the white dwarf's orbiting artificial planetoid. Crecia Station had been a secret Imperial research facility. During the rule of the Emperor, it had moved from covert place to hidden location to secret destination. Wherever it went, it carried with it a reputation of evil. Most of the records of its work had been destroyed when the Empire fell. Its researchers had fled. Han knew only one thing about Crecia for certain. It had been sent to this star system to adapt the destructive power of the black hole to the martial ambitions of the Emperor. Crecia had failed, but it still existed, hidden out here on the edge of civilization, isolated by the disruption of the exploding, dying stars that were sucked into the black hole. Some inhabitants remained, content to be free of the Empire. They also lived outside the New Republic, without the protection of its justice. Without the protection or the restraints. Like a patchwork umbrella, powerful shielding covered half the irregular artificial planetoid of Crecia Station. As the station had grown, the patches had spread. Shielding formed the residence domes and the corridors of the airlinks. Han set the Millennium Falcon down on a bare patch of blasted stone.
"Wouldn't you know, first vacation I ever get and I come to a backwater."
"3PO, where's your contact?" Luke asked. "Here to meet us, I'm virtually certain, Master Luke." C-3PO peered nervously through the viewport. A few weeks ago, Han had begun to receive incomprehensible messages.
But 3PO recognized the language. He said it was nearly extinct. The messages passed on rumors of strange events at Crecia Station. Han had charged 3PO with replying to the messages using the same obscure language and with setting up a rendezvous. Now 3PO, being 3PO, took full responsibility for the entire expedition. I do hope we're not following a hoax.
It's all right, 3PO, wouldn't be your fault.
But I could hardly survive the embarrassment if the rumors turned out to be of no account.
Han gave up listening to 3PO's worries and turned his attention to the outpost. The low oblate air links protected and connected the districts of the station, some rich and well-kept, some collapsing into piles of rubble. Though the Empire's research facilities had been abandoned, the community that had sprung up around them had continued. Some of the inhabitants had found other, less legitimate ways to thrive, without the presence of the Empire or the attention of the New Republic. Han would be sorry for Luke, of course, if he failed to find the lost Jedi he hoped to discover, but Han was content to be here whether the trip turned out to be vacation or adventure. Han shut down the Falcon and set several security devices, some of them cleverer than others.
Let's go. And remember who we are. I mean, who we aren't.
3PO had put on the purple lacquer. Han had grown a beard. But Luke had done nothing to disguise himself.
I don't know, kid, Han said to Luke. I still think you ought to do something. Shave your head, maybe? Otherwise, somebody's sure to recognize you.
Luke gave him a quizzical glance. I'm not shaving my head. No one will recognize me.
Han felt dizzy. Luke's features suddenly blurred and reformed. He became, in Han's eyes, a different individual. Darker hair, a handspan taller, thinner, his features ordinary and unmemorable.
Damn it, don't do that to me!
The image shivered away. All right, I won't affect you, but no one else will recognize me. They descended and got into a waiting crawler that dropped them off at the entry bay to the city.
Han glanced at Luke.
Now what? Do you have any idea where to start looking for your lost Jedi?
Luke shook his head. I expected to be able to sense... Luke shrugged unhappily.
No, there's nothing. Maybe they're shielding themselves, hiding. After the way the Empire hunted them down, who can blame them?
Han did not believe a group of lost Jedi existed. On the other hand, the longer Luke searched for them, the longer Han's vacation would last.
Beneath the transparent radiation shields, the carnival light of the burning whirlpool turned gray and soft. Small shadows appeared and disappeared, dappling the ground. Han glanced up. As Crecia Station spun on its axis, the black hole and its accretion disk created a violent dawn. The burning whirlpool stretched across a quarter of the sky. When it set, its white dwarf companion would rise. Han and Luke had to pass on foot through several air links and as many completely different domes before they found lodging. The first dome was like a carnival. Bands and jugglers, acrobats and merchants demonstrated their abilities or displayed their wares. From there, they passed into a region of huge machines and warehouses, then into a lush park where alien vegetation clambered up the walls and moderated the whirlpool light with leaves in all the colors of the rainbow. Then they entered the largest dome. The top curved so far overhead that small clouds floated at the apex and a breeze circulated the heavy, warm air. A lodge followed the contour of a crater, the building's front spilling down to a pool at the crater's floor, and rising to a tower at the crater's rim. They stepped over the threshold into a cool, dim room filled with an indoor pool.
Hey, is anybody here?
Han shouted. Yes, human being, I am here.
An image formed above the pond, flickering, reflecting shards of light throughout the room. Han could not make out a definite shape amidst the hypnotic aurora. This waterspout image, he discovered, was the innkeeper.
We want three rooms, two for humans, one fitted for a droid.
Payment 2 standard days in advance, if you please.
The room was luxurious, with everything from instant delivery high cuisine in the alcove to a patio overlooking the spectacular crater lake far below. Nevertheless, if Han could not negotiate the letter of credit he had brought, he and Luke would be on a dangerously short rein.
Han had a bad feeling about the letter of credit. Crecia Station was too far off the spaceways. It was outside the embrace of the New Republic. The rights and privileges and services he took for granted did not exist here. Crecia was the kind of place he had known inside out before he became General Han Solo. The kind of place where he could land the Falcon, walk into any establishment, and blend in or stand out as he chose. He wondered if he still had that ability.
"You've gotten too soft," he said to himself. "Too complacent, too secure. It's time to make some changes. And time to repair our finances."
He knew Luke would disapprove of his plan. As Han grabbed his jacket and left, Luke knocked on the connecting door between their rooms. Instead of answering, Han left by the front door and hurried away down the corridor.
Anakin wriggled furiously in Jaina's arms, trying to get down.
"Bad mans, Jaina. Bad mans."
"Stop wriggling, Anakin." Jaina hugged her little brother, but that just made him struggle even more. His face was streaked with furious tears. They were on a perfectly circular patch of Manto Kudru feather grass. Jason and Mr. Chamberlain's werewolf slept on the grass beside Jaina. Jaina wanted to wake Jason up, but she had just woken up. Waking up had hurt. It never hurt to wake up before, never before in her whole life. The patch of grass was not part of the meadow anymore. It was in a big metal room. Metal walls rose very high above all around. Jaina could not see any doors. She could not see any windows. Big lights glared down at her from the ceiling.
"Don't cry, Anakin, don't cry. I'll take care of you. I'm 5, so I'll take care of you because you're only 3.
Jaina wished Papa was here too, and Mama, and Winter, and Chewie, but she did not say so. She had to be the adult. She was only 5 minutes older than Jason. They were twins, even though they did not look exactly alike. Her hair was light brown and very straight. Jason's was dark and curly. But she was still oldest. She was almost already getting her grown-up teeth. Her right front tooth was really loose. She wiggled it with her tongue while she thought what to do. Jason opened his eyes.
"Ouch,"
he said, just as Jaina said, "Ouch." She could feel what he felt. He could feel what she felt. Jaina's head hurt like somebody was screaming in her ear. She made the scream and the hurt go away, from her and from Jason, before he was all awake. She was not supposed to use her Jedi abilities unless Uncle Luke was with them, but sometimes it was hard not to do something, like now. She stooped and pushed aside the fronds of feather grass, looking for her multi-tool. She knew it was here. She had brought it to the field to look at things with. When Chewie fell down, she had jumped up. Then she had fallen asleep. She must have dropped it. There! Jaina snatched up the tool. She shoved it deep into her pocket to keep it hidden. With her multi-tool, she would be safe. A door opened. A tall and very beautiful man walked out. He had gold and copper and cinnamon-colored striped hair, very pale skin, and very big black eyes. His face was sharp and thin, all corners. He wore a long white robe. He smiled and knelt in front of them.
"You poor children. Don't you remember me?"
"No.
How could you? You were only just born. I'm your hold father, Hethrir."
Jaina stared at him, uncertain. She had never heard of any hold father Hethrir. But she and Jason and Anakin had lots of hold fathers and hold mothers. Their hold parents always brought them toys and treats that were not allowed otherwise.
"Children, a terrible thing has happened. I came to visit you to see my sweet friend Leia and my old comrade Han, to meet your Uncle Luke. But when I came, I saw a horrible thing, an earthquake. Do you know what an earthquake is?"
Uneasily, Jaina nodded.
"I'm sorry, children. The castle, it was so old, it fell down and..."
He stopped and took a deep breath. Jaina's lower lip started to quiver.
"The ground opened up and swallowed friend Chewbacca, and you were about to slide down into the horrible crack in the earth. But I was right there, and I swooped down, and I saved you. But I couldn't save friend Chewbacca, and..."
He glanced down and wiped a tear from his cheek.
I'm so sorry, children. We could not rescue your mama, or your papa, or your uncle.
Jason started to say suspiciously,
But Papa and Uncle Luke...
Jaina used her Jedi ability to nudge him. He shut up.
None of that now.
Old Father Hethrir smiled.
Somehow he knew what she had done, and it made him angry, though he was smiling. Scared, Jaina pulled back inside herself.
Your dear family is gone, my children. The Republic asked me to take you, to protect you, and teach you. Poor children. You've had such a hard day. Come along, it's time for bed.
He urged them toward the doorway. Jaina saw another person standing in the darkness. Scared, she stopped.
Come forward, Tigress. Don't stand there hiding in the shadows.
Tigress took a step forward. He was not even grown up, only 12 or 13. He wore a brown robe. It needed to be washed, and the hem had come down. He had striped hair like Hethra's, but his was silver and black. It needed to be washed, too.
Don't make our new sister carry the child,
Hethra said.
Show your manners.
Are they brothers? Jaina wondered. He doesn't act like Tigress's brother. I'd never talk to Anakin in such a mean way.
Tigress tried to take Anakin from Jaina. She stepped back. Jason jumped in front of her to help protect their little brother. Together they created the barrier Uncle Luke had taught them to make. They would not let Tigress take Anakin. The barrier shimmered around Jaina. And then it fell apart, like a sandcastle in the tide.
Now, now, Hethra said. None of that. Didn't your uncle ever tell you not to behave like that? You're being very, very bad.
The werewolf growled. Suddenly it slid across the deck and crashed against the wall. Jaina cried out. The werewolf yelped and lay still.
Woof,
Anakin cried. Tigress, his eyes sad and hopeful, took Anakin from Jaina's arms. She could not stop him. She could not move. She could not extend her mind to her brother's. Little Anakin pushed at Tigress. Tigress yelped with pain. He nearly dropped the child. He held on to him till Anakin's feet touched the ground. Hethrir stared intent at Anakin, then he smiled.
As I expected, from the Skywalker line.
He reached past Jaina and stroked Anakin's hair. Suddenly he grabbed a lock and yanked it hard. Anakin screamed in surprise and pain and outrage. Furious, Jaina bit Hethrir right through his robe. Jason pummeled Hethrir's arm with both his fists. Hethrir did not even flinch. Anakin's abilities erupted around them all. The dark hallway lighted up.
Light shone through Hethra's fingers. His hand looked like a skeleton. Anakin's light went out.
Jaina felt like a wet, cold blanket had fallen around her. Tigress pulled Jaina and Jason away from Hethra. Jaina's loose tooth fell out and stuck to Hethra's sleeve. Jaina was so surprised she stopped biting.
Be quiet.
Hethra's voice was scary. He turned, his long white robe swirling at his heels, and carried Anakin into the darkness. Tigress pushed Jaina and Jason along the hallway, then around a turn. The wet, cold blanket of Hethra's power still surrounded Jaina. The corridor ended in a big, square stone room. The room had no walls, only wooden doors. All the doors were closed. There were no windows. Tigress's hand lay on her shoulder. It was the only warm thing in her whole world. For a second, just a second, his touch felt like a friendly hug. Jaina thought he might pick her up and carry her to a place where she could take a nap and tuck her in. Then she remembered where she was and what had happened. And maybe Tigress remembered that, too, because he shook her shoulder and urged her forward. They reached one of the little doors. Tigress opened it. There was hardly anything at all beyond the door, only a tiny room just the width of the door and only about twice as deep. Tigress let go of Jason's hand and pressed him a few steps forward into the little room. The door thudded shut behind him. Across the hall, he opened a door to another room just like Jason's, but as far from her brother's as it could be. Jaina looked up at Tigress.
I want to go home.
I know,
Tigress said softly. He hesitated, then gestured to the tiny room.
But you cannot.
She went in. She had no other choice. He closed the door behind her.
Tigris hurried back to Lord Hethra's chambers.
I was foolish, he thought. Foolish and weak to coddle the children.
You took longer than necessary, Hethra said.
Yes, Lord Hethra. I erred. I spoke to the children. I was weak and foolish.
The smallest new child, Anakin, sat quietly in the middle of the rug.
You have confessed your weakness. I will forgive you. What do you think of this child?
Tigris regarded the little boy.
He could be very strong. His light shines.
Hethra nodded.
An adequate observation.
Tigris was thrilled by the compliment. Not precisely a compliment, but as near as Hethra ever gave him. For once he had not displeased his master.
I shall take him to be purified.
Tigris was so startled he forgot his place.
To be purified? This child, an Empire youth, he thought. If my lord will present this contrary child for purification, why won't he present me? My lord, he has no training. He isn't a proctor. He isn't even a helper.
Hethra gazed at him without anger or comment. Terrified, Tigris fell silent.
I shall take the child to be purified. Take my message to the helpers. They are to prepare my ship.
Yes, Lord Hethra. I beg your forgiveness.
Hethra sighed.
You continually apologize, but you never change in such a way as to make apology unnecessary. That is what you must strive for.
Tigris hung his head. Hethra rose. The whining hum of his lightsaber filled the room. The blade vanished. Lord Hethra gave the handle of the lightsaber to Tigris.
Try once more.
The lightsaber was too large for Tigris's hands, but he clasped it as best he could. He knew what Lord Hethra wanted him to do. The blade of the lightsaber could only be activated by the use of the Force. Hethra would not accept anyone into his inner circle who could not complete the circuit and generate the blade.
Tigris tried. How he tried to make a connection to the Force, to extend himself, to create the blade.
The child, Anakin, raised his head and watched with interest. Nothing happened. The saber remained cold and dead.
Mine,
Anakin said, stretching his hand toward Tigris.
Lord Hethra smiled fondly at Anakin. No, little one. You have no need of my lightsaber.
Lord Hethra took back his saber and fastened the handle to his belt beneath his outer robe.
Go.
Yes, Lord Hethra.
He had disappointed his mentor. He had disappointed himself. And he was frightened. Children who could not touch the Force did not deserve to remain in the presence of Lord Hethra. Leia dreamed in sounds. She was surrounded by darkness, but whistles and warbles came to her from all directions. The voices formed shapes in the night. She cried out, reaching for the shapes, three small figures so fragile and precious. Leia gasped and woke with a start.
What a horrible nightmare, she thought.
Then she remembered. It was not a nightmare. R2-D2 whistled plaintively, then rolled toward the doorway, then rolled back to her.
What's the matter?
R2 whirred toward the door. It waited, then scooted through. Curious, troubled, Leia hurried to follow. The small droid led her past the woods and the meadow to the landing field, stopping only when they reached Alderaan, Leia's pride and joy. Alderaan was a sleek little ship with hyperdrive capabilities. It was registered to a person who did not exist, a second identity Leia had established so that someday she would be able to take a few days off and fly away to a pleasant place without being recognized. Luke had chided her for spending time to learn to fly her ship that she could have used to study the ways of the Jedi, but the truth was it was much easier and faster to learn to fly Alderaan than to learn to be a Jedi Knight, and a great deal more fun.
Is someone in there, R2?
The droid's soft, faint hum was like the sound Alderaan made as it powered up for liftoff.
All right. I'll stop them before they can take off.
Leia entered her ship and moved silently down its corridor. She had no feeling of intrusion, no sense that anyone was aboard. R2-D2 followed on silent treads. She glanced over her shoulder, expecting to see R2-D2 mimicking the sound of her ship again. The hum increased. Someone had begun the takeoff procedure. R2-D2 had extended connectors into the ship's systems and powered up the Alderaan's drive.
"Stop it, R2. What are you doing? I can't..."
A display flashed into being before her. The display traced out the spaceways of Munto Kodru. Traffic was light around this old world. No ship had arrived or departed for several days. Except one. A single distinct trail led from the surface. It reached escape velocity, streaked away from the planet, reached for hyperspace, and disappeared. Leia gasped and sat down hard in the pilot's couch. She was looking at the trace of a ship that could belong to the kidnappers. Why didn't anyone show this to me before? R2-D2 showed her that the information had disappeared from the spaceport's records. The only uncorrupted information lay within R2-D2's compact shell.
"They got away," Leia whispered. "How did you know? How did you find out?"
R2 sang her an explanation. The droid might have to navigate through local space at any time, and as a precaution, made a habit of tracking spaceship traffic. When the kidnapper struck, R2 compared memory banks to the spaceport report and noted a disparity. Leia knew she should shut Alderaan down, return to the castle, and confer with her advisors, talk for hours trying to decide what to do, what was prudent, waiting on the whim of the people who had stolen her children. Arguing with Chamberlain Ion about whether it was a coup kidnapping. She laid one hand gently on R2-D2's carapace.
"Yes, you're right. I have to take the risk."
She went through the countdown sequence. Her ship came alive around her.
What was that?
Leia jumped up and ran to the rear of the ship. In the second cabin, Chewbacca lay in the bunk.
What? How?
R2-D2 rolled past her and stopped beside Chewbacca.
You let him in? How could you? He's hurt. How is he going to heal? What am I going to do with a wounded Wookiee?
Leia had to concentrate hard to understand him. She still could not pronounce Chewbacca's language, but she had made some headway in comprehending it. Chewbacca expressed distress and regret and sorrow that he had failed Jaina and Jason and Anakin, but not a moment's remorse that he had come along.
"I'm not going back," Leia said to R2-D2. "I hope you thought to bring enough medicine."
Leia returned to Alderaan's cockpit. She quieted herself and reached out into the Force with as much skill as Luke had ever been able to teach her, until she found the trail the kidnapper's ship had taken into hyperspace. Back in his room after a successful night at the card tables, Han threw down his jacket, kicked off his boots, and flung himself onto his bed. He felt tired, but exhilarated. The humming whine of the lightsaber startled him. He whirled around.
"Where have you been?"
Luke slouched on the deep couch in the corner, wrapped in his robes, his legs extended. The lightsaber flicked off again, plunging the room into darkness.
"Out enjoying my vacation. How about you?"
The hum of the lightsaber pierced Han's inebriated brain as the blade snapped into existence. In the light of his blade, Luke looked haunted. He let the energy blade withdraw.
"What were you doing?" "Repairing our finances."
Han raised the light level in his room. He grabbed his jacket, reached into the pockets, and pulled out handfuls of credits. He let the bills flutter to the bed, to the floor, even over Luke's feet. Luke gazed at the bills dispassionately.
"What's wrong?"
Han asked, suddenly concerned.
"Something strange is happening at Cressia Station. Something strange. And I don't know what it is. I think we should be careful."
"I'm on vacation. Being careful's the last thing on my mind."
Luke stared in silence out the window.
"I'm tired. I'm going to sleep. In the morning, I'm going to sleep in and have breakfast in bed. Maybe I'm going to have lunch in bed, too."
"Do the same thing, kid. Relax. If there's anybody here for you to find, you'll find them. Or they'll find you."
"General, sir..."
3PO stepped into the room, almost invisible in his new purple skin.
I have found our contact, sir. She is here.
Her? Here? Well, what'd you bring her here for?
Because we need to speak. Han bolted up. That voice! He caught his breath. Permit me to introduce Zavery?
Zavery! We've already been introduced.
Han's heart beat wildly. He felt as if he had run a race.
Zavery faced him. She was nearly his height. She used to look him straight in the eye, but she was not wearing the high-heeled boots that had been so much a part of her style in the time he had known her. Nor was her heavy, curly black hair elaborately dressed, for she had cropped it into short, tight curls. Instead of revealing silks, she wore homespun trousers and shirt. When he had known her, she had acted both carefree and careless, avoiding any responsibility, moving on a whim. She took extraordinary risks. Exhilarated, they had taken the risks and experienced the excitement together. Zavery had risked her life against the chance that she could outsmart and outrun high officers of the Empire. She had always won.
It was I who sent you the message, she said.
Why didn't you say it was you? Why didn't you use a language I know?
Because I did not want my message to be easily read. And I did not know you would respond if you knew the message was from me.
She might be right, he thought. I'm ashamed to admit it, but she might be right.
He was surprised at the turbulence of his feelings and the strength of his pain.
What have you been up to all these years? What have you been doing in the Republic now that all the Empire officers are gone?
They're not gone, Solo.
She'd always called him Solo.
Some that you fought are dead. But many are hiding beneath respectability, waiting and working for your government to falter and fail, waiting for their chance.
They'll wait a long time.
I hope so. In the meantime, they are as venal as they always were. They are as susceptible to temptation when I offer them more wealth.
Her smile was joyous and unmerciful. You should tell me who they are, who they're pretending to be, so the New Republic can bring them to justice.
My justice is harsher and more satisfying. Perhaps when I have taken sufficient revenge, I will tell you the names of the ones I have humiliated and impoverished. And then I will humiliate and impoverish more of them and tell you who they are. Thus I will have my justice, and the Republic will have its justice.
Han wished he could ease her memories and her need for vengeance, but he could not help her in the old days, and he could not help her now. He wished he had embraced her as soon as he recognized her, but now he felt awkward about doing so. He backed away a step and looked around for his boots. His exhaustion had vanished. You've met Luke and Threepio, I see.
Yes.
Zavery inclined her head to Threepio.
I am not often received with such diplomacy.
She turned to Luke.
And I had not expected the New Republic to respond to my warning with such illustrious investigators.
We decided, Luke began, that the report deserved a serious response,
Han said quickly.
Luke might have said the same thing. Then again, he might have let it slip that Han was using her strange report as an excuse for a vacation. He did not want her to know that he had not taken the message seriously.
Your report, Luke said. You wouldn't tell us the source of the strange phenomenon, will you now? No. I will show you.
Jaina trudged down the hallway, one of many in a long line of children. The helpers, other children who wore rust-red coats, made sure the line stayed straight, while a blue-coated proctor oversaw the whole group. Tigress walked nearby.
Is that what they always have for lunch? Jaina thought.
She could still taste the rancid grease of the soup. She had not eaten it. Everyone else did. She gave hers to a red-gold centauriform child she had made friends with. But a little bully boy named Vram snatched it away and threw it on the floor and went and told on them.
Play soon,
said the red-gold centauriform child now. She cantered one quick step in place. Her dainty hooves tapped on the stone. Tigress glanced back to stop the cheerful noise. But the red-gold child was plodding along with everyone else by then. Jaina wondered what the red-gold child meant.
Play? She thought. I don't believe nasty, mean tigress will ever let us play. Why can he tell me what to do? He isn't a proctor. I don't think he's even a helper.
Ahead of her, the children climbed stairs and walked out into the light. It washed over them, bathing them in radiance, but they just kept walking. When Jaina saw the sun, she told herself, she would raise her face to it and let it pour down over her. She would run into the brightness. Stop! All the children stopped at the proctor's command. The proctor gestured sharply to Tigris. Jaina yearned toward the light in dismay, certain Tigris would pull her from the line and make her go back to the dark sleeping cell. Tigris raised her chin and turned her toward him and made her look up at him.
You can walk in the play yard, he told her. You can speak quietly in the play yard. You can't shout. You can't run. You can't dig the sand. And if you go near the fence, the dragon will eat you.
It was bright and hot, much more intense than Jaina was used to. She blinked, looking for Jason, anxious to see him, but he was not among the children who were now outside. Mr. Chamberlain's werewolf ran toward her across the sand. She fell to her knees and flung her arms around its neck.
Oh, you're all right. Did they leave you out here all alone?
She got to her feet.
Let's see if there's a way out of here.